Peter picked a peck of pickled pebbles.
I think that's been a cold open before.
Is that just what I think I'm supposed to say? Having only listened to one of our podcasts, I don't know about it. I did listen to episode 7 though recently.
Oh,
I thought it was pretty good.
Oh, good.
Wind, water, hot, go planet.
By your powers combined, I am Captain Planet.
Captain Planet.
This is Gaia's Gang, another episode, and we're going to do something a little different with this one. We're going to cram several episodes into one chit chat. I'm Ariel Van Cleve, joined as always by
Andrew McCardo
and
Emily Smith.
And why do we do this podcast in the first place, Andrew? Remind us.
Oh, we rewatch an episode or three of Captain Planet, reminisce about the 90s and our childhoods, and re-raise the issues that come up in this cartoon.
That's right. We do all of those things. It's been a while since we've done one, so we're going to be a little rusty as we get through the process of going from point A to point B to point Z. But the next thing we want to do is talk about the last episode that we watched, right? Give a little synopsis of that one.
Yeah. So the last episode was Last of Her Kind. Her being Sneezer, the elephant, the adorable baby elephant.
Whom we all fell in love with.
Who I would like to note that we have a new nephew. Hi, Leo, if you're listening. And Andrew just kept the first days he was born, kept randomly calling the baby Sneezer.
He's an adorable little sneezer. Anyway.
This show is just impacting all sorts of different parts of your life. You don't even realize it.
It hasn't affected my dreams recently, though.
Recently, he says.
It did happen. At least once.
Mm-hmm.
So little Sneezer and the other elephants. This was largely a good, darker episode with a pretty good villain, Loot and Plunder.
Mm-hmm.
It did have the failing that these episodes sometimes have with overly generalizing the location. Africa treated as basically a village where poaching was happening.
Yeah.
But all in all, pretty good episode. Good sort of Kwame-centric episode. I don't know. There's poaching, horrible murder of elephants happening in Africa. And the Planeteers stop it. They save Sneezer and Sneezer's mom and protect the elephants.
Mm-hmm.
Wheeler was incredibly stupid throughout the episode. You might remember that he, on the way to the crisis, thought he might buy Linka for her birthday some ivory earrings or a necklace or jewelry of some sort. So he was a huge dumbass. And you'll hear a lot more about Wheeler today. But I think that's all we really need to say about the last episode. Mm-hmm. They stopped poaching.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. I'll also note Cousin Danielle would like us to mention how sparkling Captain Planet was while fighting Locked and Loaded. And Pillage and Plunder maybe was sparkling also. I can't remember the episode, so I'm having a hard time interpreting Cousin Danielle's comments. But somebody was very sparkly in the episode.
Likely Captain Planet. I feel like whenever he appears, there's always a little bit of like shimmer around him.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was partying in whatever realm that he returns to when he's not summoned to the earth last night. And
well, because like, what is Captain Planet? Where does he go and what does he do? And is there like a secret inner world? Does he have friends who live? Are there other
true.
Captain Planets? Are there like...
This is like your teachers when you're young. You just assume they have no life. They go home and...
Or like they just like go to the closet of like their classroom and power down for the evening.
Yes.
And then they wake, like they power
they
back
up
and then they're,
and
they teach you again. They have no life.
That's so, kind of what we're doing with Captain Planet here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In my past life, I was a high school social studies teacher. And my students told me once that they thought that the likeliest scenario was that I just went home in the evening, turned on CNN and watched it in the dark. Until it was time to go to bed. And they were not terribly far off.
Were they mostly right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
Plus, I ate a big pile of spaghetti.
Maybe there was like lights on. It wasn't always dark, but CNN was probably on or something to the effect of.
Yeah, it was usually dark.
I
don't want to make it weird. It was usually dark.
He has sensitive eyes.
So we are talking about three episodes today, and that is because Gaia's Gang is coming to an end.
Maybe? Question mark?
For now, because of geography.
Yeah.
We're not going to be in the same place.
Yeah. Two-thirds of the team is moving to the East Coast.
Yeah. So that makes things really hard. I mean, we could do it over Skype, but the ramifications of that and sound quality just wouldn't be the same.
Yeah. We hold ourselves to the very highest of audio humor and content standards. And to fail you on any of these particular parameters would just be probably too much for us.
And we'll all of that requires being in person and on these microphones. Because, you don't have that same magic when it's over Skype.
No.
Mm-mm. So now we're going to talk about the first episode that we watched. This is a Wheeler-centric, and it's a two-parter, in fact.
Can I just jump in because of my efforts to try to watch everything in between?
Yes, that's right.
Yes. Let me just preface this by saying, we said, what should we do for the final episode of the podcast? And Andrew says, I'm going to watch every episode between episode 7 and episode 26 is the last one.
Yeah, so I was going to watch episodes 8 through 23 by myself and try to do
in the dark
like a We Didn't Start the Fire quick hitting summary of the entire rest of the season of Captain Planet. I'm not going to do that.
He initially said I'm going to do it in 60 seconds. I thought 60 seconds per episode. I was like, that is 23 minutes I do not have. But then he claimed it was going to be all of those episodes total in 60 seconds.
Wow.
Y'all, how far did you get?
I watched, I think, a little more than 4 episodes. And a couple of general observations. Mm-hmm. We have said, strike that, I have said throughout this podcast that I think the cartoon is really good and worth watching. Mm-hmm. I stand by that with this caveat. You shouldn't binge watch it.
No.
It is overstimulating as all hell, like any children's show, I suppose, would be.
Yeah.
By the end of 4 episodes, I was increasingly on my phone. I did this about a week ago, and I was taking really diligent notes on my computer, and I almost all of these episodes have flown entirely out of my head. I have no idea what happened. I just felt like I was on tilt by the time I got done. It was also kind of late at night. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but the one thing I would like to say is that there's an episode 10 or 11, it's called The Tree of Life. Mm-hmm. And this is a Dr. Blight episode. Dr. Blight, who we've generally praised Meg Ryan's character as one of the strongest villains, had a very, very good episode 5,
Far and
Deadly
away.
Ransom. Mm-hmm. She's been awesome. But the plot of this episode is that Dr. Blight is seeking the Tree of Life. It's set in somewhere in North America, and the tree is protected by a Native American tribe. There's some not so great stereotypical portrayals that happen in the episode.
Oh, you don't say.
Shocking, I'm sure, to everyone listening that this would happen. And so Dr. Blight has these robots cutting down trees. They get to the Tree of Life. They cut down the Tree of Life, and she gleans from its sap a formula that gives her superpowers on par with Captain Planet.
Oh, yeah. Intrigue.
And so there's she turns herself into a tree at one point. It's it's a bananas episode. But the thing that bummed me out is that Emily previously commented on her sort of problematically pink, slinky, sexy cat suit that she wore to protect herself from radiation. In this episode, she delivers the superpower-giving sap via a, perfume. What do you call, a perfume dispenser that you would spritz? I don't know. It's sort of a pink thing. That's what she puts it in and spritzes herself with it, and that's gives her superpower.
Like a perfume bottle.
I don't know. I thought there was maybe a name for it.
I'm sure that there's some fancy schmancy name that someone will...
And then one of the later episodes...
But was it one of those with the thing with the little ball?
Yes.
The pump.
Yes.
Okay.
Tube pump perfume sprayer.
Great.
That's the name.
And then in a later episode, she has a smog monster trapped in one of these perfume sprayers.
Mm.
And I'm just like, why is that her prop?
Well, yes. I mean,
it's the early 90s and she's a gal.
I know.
Mm-hmm. She's a lady. Why would she have some, I'm thinking, some proper chemistry gear would be more appropriate.
Right.
Like some test tubes and some beakers.
She should have, what I'm saying is, and this was an era before it was regarded as problematic, but it was probably, if not the height, starting to get to the height of anabolic steroid use in sports. So she should have injected herself into the ass with her performance enhancing tree sap of drug. Life.
The thing is, lady scientists only do science using traditional cosmetic tubes mm-hmm. and bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you go into any lady scientist lab, that's what you'll find.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a given. Mm. They're all walking around with those little two pump
yeah.
perfume bottles.
Yeah. So I think that's all we really missed in the 15 or so episodes in between our episode 7.
Just, and... more problematic stereotypes and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, also Martin Sheen's villain. So we haven't actually seen him yet, but he's right. one of the voices, President Josiah Jed Bartlett from The West Wing, Martin Sheen, mm-hmm. among many, many other roles, obviously,
mm-hmm.
pops up as a villain named Sludge or something. And he was kind of, I think he was kind of like a hippie, and his whole thing was gathering up garbage and dumping it in a volcano. Anyway, it was kind of cool to hear Martin Sheen's voice on the show, but otherwise not something that anybody really missed out on.
Fair enough.
So jumping ahead to episode 24 of season 1 of Captain Planet. Episode 24.
That's right. And this one is called The Two Futures. It's parts 1 and 2. And in part 1, basically the situation is Dr. Blight and Hoggish Greedley. I want to just make him have like a real name, apparently. They are kind of teaming up to figure out the best way to have their industrial needs met. They want to go back in time to prevent any regulations from going into place so that they can just burn coal freely without a care in the world, and just destroy the planet. But that's what they want. They just want to make their money, do their thing.
Yeah, and we're about to do some time travel, which a lot yeah. of fun with that. But yeah. this plot, I think Greedley's specific goal, yes, he wanted to pollute as much as possible starting in 1950
yeah.
all the way to the present. And his end game was he was going to develop properties on Greenland.
Oh,
so he was
right.
going to melt the ice, and then he was going to own Greenland, and he was going to develop property. Now, this is basically the plot of Superman, the first movie. Lex Luthor buys up all of the land along the San Andreas Fault on mm-hmm. what would become the West Coast if the big one hit
mm-hmm.
and knocked off, like, California, Washington, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to own all the land that would become coastal property after he triggered a massive earthquake. And so I was like, okay, I think they stole this from Superman, but
super industrious idea though.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really, the amount of effort and time that's going into this whole plan just to buy up some land in Greenland and then like have it ready to go and beachfront whatever.
Yeah,
but cool, way to go, guys.
You can make a lot of money in real estate. I understand from TV.
There are a lot of shows dedicated to the amount of money one can yeah, make.
That's my contribution.
So like. But this time travel pool, it's a pool that you have to jump into.
Like a whirlpool.
And it's like radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing.
I can't help out here. I don't remember what happened in this episode. I do remember the whirlpool. And in general, I'm a fan of hot tubs.
This is the
natural springs.
Not radioactive ones, though.
Radioactive ones, you could take a pass.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it's like they're it's also New Year's Eve when all mm-hmm. of this is happening.
Oh, yes.
And Wheeler's all jazzed up about showing everybody a good time because it's all that he cares about is just having a good time with his buds. He doesn't want to go solve any eco-emergency bullshit stuff.
Although I kind of sided with Wheel. I found myself strangely siding with him on this one because, mm-hmm. guys, take a night off. Work can wait. I don't know.
I know, but
thinking a lot about work-life balance for these Planeteers.
Well, and I think that that's something that he carries a lot of that burden of like, I don't want to have to work all the time. And everybody else, all the other Planeteers are constantly wanting to be the do-gooders. That has to get annoying when you're Wheeler and you just want to be like a bro walking around with your shirt half tucked in.
Maybe we should have seen then the plot of this episode coming.
I know.
Yeah.
But none of us could. I mean, not really.
No, I still can't. What happened?
So they're trying to have a nice time. He's trying to set up this whole party. And then all of a sudden, fucking Gaia shows up and she's like, eco emergency. You got to come look at the big screen. I'm going to show you some things because I have cameras everywhere.
Right.
And then they show this pool and they're hanging out by it. And they're like, they're going to go back to the 50s and they're going to do all this stuff. And it's going to be a really big problem. We can't let them do it. We need to stop them. So they have to ship out to go stop them.
And this was sort of like, so in the briefing on Hope Island, Gaia shows them what appears to be Hoggish Greedley and his BBC sidekick about to imminently jump into this time pool that Dr. Blight has created.
Right.
Like, it's going to happen in seconds, it seems like. Mm-hmm. And yet the Planeteers have time to scramble, get onto the Ecojet, and zip on over there and intervene mm-hmm. before they can do this. Mm-hmm. It reminded me of Game of Thrones Season 7, when the Night King has surrounded Jon Snow and the Rangers who are there to collect a zombie in the north.
Uh-huh.
And Daenerys Targaryen warps there with her dragons to mm-hmm. to intervene and stop
it.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so maybe time travel happens even before we realized it. In this episode, because that was ridiculous.
It really was. But like, they appear, they slide down this slide that, like, they get themselves into this little cavern where they're doing this whirlpool thing, and they enter after...
Yeah, because was Dr. Blight in, were they in Greenland? Were they under
yes.
underground in Greenland?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. They arrive, they get themselves inside, they work for a little while to try to figure out a way to make them stop, and then they give in, and then they're like, let's call Captain Planet. So then Captain Planet appears, and like, they kind of duke it out for a while. But then there's the problem all of a sudden where, like, how did the water get involved? Because I missed that. I must have, like, looked away from the screen for a second. Yeah.
I think it fell from the ceiling.
Okay.
So in all the commotion with Captain Planet and the fighting, mm-hmm. Wheeler at some point runs across the room to tackle Hoggish Greenlee and his sidekick before they go into the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's by himself. And then in all the sort of further commotion, a bunch of ice falls down and creates a barrier. On one side is Dr. Blight, Hoggish Greedley, his sidekick, and Wheeler. On the other side is Captain Planet, all the rest of the kiddos.
Right.
I think.
Yes, that's right. So there's an issue here, though. The ice has touched the pool, and the pool is radioactive. So now the ice has become radioactive somehow. So now you've got this as part of your situation, and they're trying to get Wheeler out, but instead of just, like, I don't know, using your fire to get yourself out of this icy cavern, Captain Planet tries to run up against the ice wall, but then it's sapping his powers.
He's weakened, yeah. He probably ordinarily could smash right through, but he's
just
too weak.
Smash right through. We just can't do it. So everybody's flipping out, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We got to get him out of there. We got to get him out of there. The other issue here is that they're running out of air.
Yes.
This is a problem.
Yeah, Wheeler and Dr. Blight appear to be very sleepy, and Mal mm-hmm. finds this funny. Mm-hmm. Evil computer Mal, voiced by Tim Curry
mm-hmm.
of Rocky Horror Picture Show fame.
Mm-hmm. Of he Home was, Alone 2 fame.
Clue,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And many other things, of course, but mm-hmm. I think those are the iconic
Roseanne
roles. Roseanne?
Yeah.
I definitely don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. He was in Roseanne for a little while.
So Mal is saying it's CO2. You're in a lot of trouble. Captain Planet has returned to the rings because he was so weakened. So Wheeler ought to have his firepower, but he doesn't use it.
He doesn't use it.
And so he goes, Blight wants Wheeler to change history. Does she trick him into going
yes.
to the past? Is that the,
yes.
is that the deal?
Yeah. So Blight tricks him into going into the past by saying, if you go back and keep yourself from becoming a Planeteer, then none of this would even happen. You
right.
wouldn't even be stuck here. So why wouldn't you want to go do it? And he's like, oh, dang, that's a really good idea, because he's Wheeler and he's stupid and cannot see past, like, just situational problems that he has. He cannot think big picture. That's, like, not his strength. It never has been.
Yeah, and we learned, big revelation, this season has taken place over the course of almost exactly one calendar year.
Right. All of this stuff, it's only been a year.
26 eco-emergencies, so an eco-emergency every other week.
Good God. No wonder he's exhausted.
That's why he deserved a New Year's Eve party.
He really did. Thanks a lot, Gaia. And instead, what happens? He gets stuck behind a radioactive ice wall.
I'd like to pause here to note that while you were talking about whatever happened on the show, I've been reading about radioactive ice, which is apparently a real thing.
Oh.
Yes. Apparently, nuclear testing from the 50s, 60s, fallout from Chernobyl, mm-hmm. a bunch of it has apparently been trapped into glacial ice. This spring, some scientists are like, hey, heads up, there's going to be a lot of nuclear energy release as the glaciers melt. So,
well, that's horrifying.
That's not a re-raise of an issue. That's a new issue. Captain Planet just intuited that this might be a problem. Anyways.
Good for Captain Planet.
Yeah.
He decides he's going to do it, but then she also kind of pushes him into the pool, and then he goes back in time.
And so, yeah, then we...
And he goes back in time to the moment that he was, like, saving the guy from the bad guy, and they're in New York, and, like... he does the same, like, he does the same stuff, but then he, like, sees himself, like, he's watching himself do all the same things he did before. And then just as the ring shoots out of a trash can fire, he, like, runs at old version of himself as current version of himself. And he's like, don't do it, dude.
And he's,
don't do it.
The version of himself that's about to accept the ring is very easily convinced not to take it.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a whole hell of a lot.
No, and it doesn't take much. And it's also the fact that that's so Wheeler, though. So he says, yeah, okay, that sounds fine for other version of myself. And this isn't weird at all that I'm seeing me. Okay. So besides all that, then there's a problem, because as soon as he doesn't take the ring, then, like, everything around him heats up. Like, the whole planet is warmer all of a sudden. It's January, and there's a guy in, like, shirt sleeves and fanning himself sitting on the corner. And Wheeler's like, well, what the hell? Like, why is it so hot out? And then Gaia appears, and she's like, you fucking idiot, basically.
Because
she's like, what the fuck are you fucking thinking?
Yes, because Wheeler never became a planeteer.
Mm-hmm. So he changed history completely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because there was nobody to take his place. Mm-hmm. We are going to learn along the way in these next this episode and its companion episode that no one else could have fulfilled the role of the Fire Planeteer.
It was only Wheeler. It yeah. had to be Wheeler.
And so there's no Captain Planet.
Nope.
The others took their rings,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get to them in a little bit. But yeah, the planet is warmer because Hoggish Greedley and his sidekick have successfully traveled back in time in this universe to the 1950s,
mm-hmm.
and have been burning the shit out of fossil fuels for, mm-hmm. at this point, 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and have already affected the global climate significantly.
Yeah.
Greedley's and his sidekick's mission really reminded me also of the plot of Stephen King's 11/22/63,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, like the evil version. So in 11/22/63, a school teacher in 2011 travels back to the late 1950s to hang out there for 5 years and try to stop the Kennedy assassination.
Mm-hmm.
And in this universe, they go back to the 1950s to wreck the fucking planet. Thanks a lot, guys.
Mm-hmm.
Good book. It is a good book. It's one of the only...
I think it's also a miniseries, too.
Oh, yes.
James
Have
Franco.
You read it?
Mm-mm.
It's actually totally worth a read. I've read no Stephen King. Andrew loves Stephen King. So when this came out and it's kind of historical fiction, I was like, yeah. Maybe this is a place we can read a book together.
I'm a big fan of time travel things. That's why I was excited about this episode. But then
and Americana. I think you like Americana.
I do.
You're going to like this book. Put it on your list. High on the list. It was one of the best books I read that year.
Oh.
Based on the portrayals in 11/22/63, I have scientifically concluded that the best time and place ever to drink a beer is in 1958 in Maine. Because the way that Stephen King describes going into a bar,
mm-hmm.
you know, putting like 25 cents on the counter,
mm-hmm.
and drinking a cold draft beer. Oh, it's about lunchtime. Should we go? And
we're going to zip through these episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. Let's...
Next episode.
So, like, so we end with Wheeler, because we said it was a two-parter, so we end with Wheeler realizing that he's done something really stupid, and now he has to go and fix the thing that he's done something, and now he has to go fix it. So, in the part two, he winds up visiting the Planeteers in the future, because he just keeps jumping into this radioactive time pool.
35 years in the future, which would put us at 2025.
Okay.
So 6 years from now.
And it's bleak.
It's so one
Shit
of the scenes
is bleak.
One of the scenes we see, I can't remember if it's at the end of the first episode or the beginning of the second, and who cares, but there is, so the sea level has risen, I think 6 feet, they say, along mm-hmm. the eastern coast of the United States. Mm-hmm. And so the Statue of Liberty is toppled over with her head and arm out of the water. And it looks, it's reminiscent of that Planet of the Apes scene
oh,
when Charlton
yeah.
Heston realizes he's actually on Earth.
Mm-hmm. You damn dirty apes.
It's pretty sweet.
So he visits his friends. And he starts with Guy, and he runs into her, and he's like, hey, Guy, what's happening? And she's like, I don't know who you are, young man. And he's like, you look so old. And, I mean, she's 50 now. So, like, yeah, that's what happens when you go in the future. So they have a little conversation, and Guy talks about the fact that there's, like, no dolphins left in the world. And she just is rescuing one of the last that's left. And she's been so burned by all of the shit happening on Earth that she has closed herself off from everybody else and now lives by herself on an island.
She's a hermit. She's like a Jedi master. She's like a cynical, pissed off Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yeah.
Who like, is this?
Ghee.
I must have.
Oh, you know what?
I remember because wasn't she getting a dolphin out of a net?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you talk about
which that? Which is one of the last remaining species. Oh, jeez. Also, I just want to say, we're watching this episode.
I was here.
And he's going to visit Physically. Ghee. And I think Wheeler says, he says out loud he's going to go visit Ghee or something like that. And Emily says to me, who's Ghee?
Oh, Emily.
Yeah, I'm telling on you.
Well, anyways, that
Ghee's the one with the dolphin.
Bringing back the dolphin.
Yes.
I mean, this is the
charismatic megafauna.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. It's the icon of the 90s and environmentalists, and it like is. that's the one. And
loved by Captain Planet, Lisa Franken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
People everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Did y'all notice that Ghee, her hair was like a little bit longer-ish, but one of the things I saw was that she had a gray streak, uh-huh. And it was sort of reminiscent of both Gaia and Tulsi Gabbard.
Yep, Gaia. It was Gaia-esque. Gaia-esque is what it was.
So yeah, I think she was inspired.
That's in a good question for the next presidential debate for Tulsi Gabbard. Oh wait, we're not supposed to ask female presidential candidates about their attire or look, but maybe off the record.
It's a cool look. I think we can say that.
It's definitely cool.
It really gives you a little special something for sure. So Ghee and Wheeler have this conversation. She's like laying it out for him, saying things like, listen, like the Planeteers didn't work out. Like the one kid just didn't fucking show up because he's such a dildo, like whatever.
I think that's a direct quote from Gaia. Whoopi Goldberg had to say dildo in this episode. It's pretty great.
If only. So then she wanders off and he's like, well, shit, like, if she's not going to help me, then I need to go find somebody else who will. I'll go to Kwame next. So he goes to Kwame. And Kwame's in Africa, and he's trying to, like, protect a plot of land.
The last oasis Africa.
it's like, the only place that's available, and it's up to him and only him to save it and protect it. So he's also been burned by the fact that Wheeler didn't do his bit in taking the ring and being part of the Planeteers. They fought as best as they could, but they couldn't get anything really done. So they have this conversation. They go back and forth, like, no, I can't do anything for you, strange person who just appeared out of nowhere. Wheeler's still confounded that people don't know who he is. As he spends a lot of time just, like, really needing them to know who he is just magically, but that's not how it works.
He's always surprised in these episodes, and he's always been surprised in past episodes by things that should not surprise him.
Yep.
Even by the time the last old Planetary visits Mati, I think even with Mati, he's like, no, you really don't recognize me, Mati? Right.
Like,
you
though,
look
like,
old. He's surprised by both of those things.
Yep.
And neither of them should have surprised him in the first instance with Ghee, and yet they still surprise him in the last visit with Mati.
And then with Linka, like, he finds Linka, and she's wearing, like, sunglasses because the ozone layer's been completely warped and everything's messed up and there's no crops for anybody and there's going to be a riot if she's not careful. And he's like, no, don't you remember? Like, you used to talk to birds. And she's like, yeah, I used to. But like,
all the birds are dead.
The birds are dead, bro. Everything's messed up. So then he goes and tries to think like, well, if she's not going to help me, nobody else is going to help me. I know that if Mati knows, can like remember who I am, impossibly, then we're going to get this worked out. So he goes to visit him at the Amazon, and it's a nightmare. It's like this just hellscape there. Like, worse than you could have ever imagined.
And Mati is panhandling, asking for change. And when he gets shoved over by a dickhead-looking businessman, he uses heart to make the businessman turn around and give him some money, which he then gives to somebody in need.
Right, because that's
bleak.
So Mati.
It was bleak.
And it's bleak as shit. So then ultimately it's like, okay, well, no one's going to help me. I have to figure this out on my own. I'm going to go back in time to that moment where I stop myself from taking the ring, and I'm going to stop myself from stopping myself from taking the ring. That's his plan. So now we have three...
Did we talk about Vegas Hope Island?
Oh, shit. Vegas Hope Island. That's right. Then
Hope
he went.
Vegas.
Then he went to like Gaia to try to figure out, like, well, maybe Gaia can be help, and that'd be a help to me. And then he shows up there, and it's all developed, and like, just there's one of those like cartoony sort of silly dime a dance looking gals who were there like pointing in different directions like, oh yeah, like you can find that stupid bitch over there, basically.
Mm-hmm. I think Hoggish Greedley is like running the show on Hope Island, right? He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like Gaia is just incapacitated by toxic waste, which like they use her hut to store toxic waste, and so she's just trapped there and sick.
Right. And they were like, well, I mean, like we told her that it was gonna happen and she didn't need to stay. But like of course Gaia's gonna stay and be poisoned slowly by all the toxins in her hut.
I possibly fell asleep during this part because I don't remember it, but it sounds like Las Vegas or one of
it was like a full on party resort type situation. And Gaia couldn't help him either. Like,
it's what the market demanded.
Because it
I'm so sick of people talking about the market.
So there's just no help for anybody anywhere. So he needs to take care of it himself. So he has to go back in time. So now we have three time streams that are going to collide at the same time.
There have to be some paradoxes.
He is affecting too much of the past, present, and future by doing all these bullshit things. And as someone who enjoys time traveling, whatever, like this troubled me. But he goes back, he like stops himself from stopping himself initially. And then he explains like, dude, like that guy needs to be part of the Planeteers. Like it's needed. And he's like, all right. Again, easily convinced. Mm-hmm. Apparently it just takes himself to convince himself, but it has to be physically him mm-hmm. for it to work.
And then when they jump into the two Wheelers. So we've got Wheeler who's just become a Planeteer and taken the ring. The two other Wheelers. Jump into the time pool thing to return to his current time and state. And they merge into one Wheeler. And I had this really existential question of like, which Wheeler persists? Was a Wheeler destroyed? Have they become one?
That's a fair question. Because I feel like that was a dangerous thing to do, given what people understand of time travel. Like, what happens inside this radioactive pool, first of all? It just felt like a dangerous idea.
The two Wheelers have become one, and now they're both sterile from the radiation.
But hey, guess what? The problem is solved. But a new one's been created. We just don't know about that one yet. It doesn't fit in the plot. So he's got like his shirt on, and he's all excited about his little Planeteer shirt. Then like
his merch.
So his merch is good to go. Like his uniform is back together. Like shit is handled. But now I can't remember how it ends.
Oh, my favorite part of this whole episode. Now that he's returned to the fold as mm-hmm. a Planeteer, the future's bright. And so I think Gaia sends, or Greedley and Blight and the sidekick travel to the 21st century. So to 2025, Planeteers exist. And it's this idyllic paradise where like the Planeteer movement has become a thing. Mm-hmm. And now the older Planeteers are all at some like ceremony that's happening to commemorate how the planet has been saved. And it honestly looks like, so in Star Trek, in the 23rd century, Earth is a utopia. It's a paradise. There's no poverty. There's no mm-hmm. you know, thing. And obviously the show focuses on the exploration of space, but Earth itself is a paradise. Mm-hmm. It looks like the Star Trek vision of Earth mm-hmm. as paradise. Mm-hmm. So guys, in 6 years...
things are going to be great.
Yeah, we're going to be fine.
We're going to get this licked. This whole climate change thing, it's not a problem at all.
Womp womp.
Yeah, spoiler alert for in about 10 minutes when we talk about... the IPCC.
So, those were parts one and two of the two futures.
And Linka played Auld Lang Syne because it was New Year's Eve on her little guitar.
Oh, I liked that. You didn't like that?
That was it was fine.
Should old acquaintance be...
Take that as far as you can. Keep going.
I'm sure I don't know the words.
But in the next episode, Dr. Blight returns. This one's called Heat Wave. And
we're having a heat wave. Mm-hmm. Tropical heat wave.
I don't know what that is.
The temperature's rising. It isn't surprising. We're having a heat wave. You don't know that song?
No.
Really?
This is the first time I've been on the other side of this.
Oh.
That's amazing.
Welcome to my life.
Wait, but what is it?
It's like an old song.
Called Heat Wave.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a banger.
No one in the history of that song has ever called it a banger, and I'm glad that you just did.
What I want to say about these episodes is that two-parter was, despite all of our shitting on Wheeler, I thought that it did a genuinely good job of portraying the global consequences of global warming.
Yeah.
As it was called then by Captain Planet and is still called by the IPCC.
And I think what made a difference in this episode, in those two episodes, is that they made very specific, they pointed to very specific things that were causing the problem. Instead, it was like coal burning, regulation issues, like this, being very specific throughout the show.
Yeah, there was a really concise explanation of the greenhouse effect, what it is, what mm-hmm. it does, why it happens. Mm-hmm. Showed us factories. They showed us the specific effects in different places, coastal flooding, mm-hmm. Drought and disaster, you know, ruining of the rainforest. They worked in the ozone layer depletion, which was obviously, as we've talked about, a big deal in the 1990s, but nailed that one.
Yep.
We're good there. And that was sort of like on a global scale.
It's because Aquanet stopped being made.
My hair's frizzier, but...
We can cut this, but do you think Donald Trump still has like old pre-1995 bottles of Aquanet like in the White House that he has somebody like just blanket over his melon every morning?
He may.
That's a theory of mine. But so these last two episodes were global scale. Here are the consequences in all these different places. This last episode, it feels sort of silly to have two-parters back to back, actually, and then end the season with just a standalone episode. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was odd. And it's sort of like how the Rolling Stones Exile on Main Street doesn't end with Shine a Light. It ends with Soul Survivor. And it's like, well, we just heard Shine a Light. We don't need another song. But
what? Are you claiming those previous two weird time travel episodes should have been the finale?
Yes.
No. But
I think they should have been the finale,
no,
except for what,
absolutely
you're
not.
What I don't actually think that. It felt that way to me before I saw this episode. But what you'll see in this episode, as we'll discuss, is this sort of takes like global, maybe too big to really get your brain around consequences, and just like hammers home the lesson, like browbeats you with.
Yeah.
It turns Hope Island into like the classroom-sized laboratory to say like, here are the all the effects of climate change just packed into a tiny little area. And if you don't get this at this point, you're just a fucking idiot.
Right. Because so Dr. Blight appears at Hope Island and has plans to just like mess it up big time. Like she just wants to destroy it with doing all of the environmental woes you could possibly think of, pummeling the island itself and everybody on it, which involved like this big crazy ship thing that was like burning coal and
gigantic. This is a huge evil looking barge.
It's massive. And there's like she creates like a force field around Hope Island so that she can just pump it full of shit. And mm-hmm. yeah,
force field. That's a very fucking 90s thing.
Yes, it is.
Do we have force fields? Are force fields real? Can we
know.
Do that? I know we can't do it in like the Captain Planet or X-Men sense, but like, can scientists make a force field?
I don't know.
I think not, but maybe. I'm not totally sure on that.
And if they can't, I'm sure that there's a couple of scientists out there that are like, I'm going to figure out how to make a force
field. I mean, you can... Does a magnetic field count? This is something that a human can't like push through?
Yeah. Yeah, like it's that. Just like a very thin layer of
energy.
Of energy kind of
that
prevents that keeps things trapped inside. No, nothing is going in or out.
I have a number of issues to follow up with at the end of this episode. Let me get back to you.
Okay. They use them in Star Wars to seal like airlocks and things like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, big deal. Anyway, very 90s, came up in a lot of ways. I just wonder about that.
So with this episode, I was kind of moving in and out of the room, so you're going to have to help me follow along with what happened.
Yeah, so Dr. Blight...
Good news, I watched this one closely and took notes.
Sweet. So you want to take it away?
Where are we?
Dr. Blight is approaching Hope Island on a barge. She encounters Linka, who's windsurfing.
Mm-hmm.
This episode was also an excuse to get these Planeteers into their bathing suits.
Yeah, it was.
Some two-piece action. The
dude shirtless.
But they
were pretty sporty. I was fine with it.
Though, Kwame had, a Ken doll situation going, I was noticing, that was kind of freaking me out a little bit.
Was
like,
his torso too V-shaped?
It was... No, his torso was just, he didn't have any nipples.
He had no genitalia.
And, it was odd to see. I was like... Then I'm like, well, would you want to put nipples on a cartoon? I guess not. I guess that makes sense. But it also is unsettling. Hmm. Either way you cut it, mm-hmm. didn't feel right. Sorry, go ahead. It was just a distraction.
No, it's I love talking about teenagers in bathing suits.
I mean, you brought it up. Creepy.
I did. Damn right I did.
So creepy.
So Linka gets captured by Dr. Blight because she's out windsurfing. Says something very funny like, why is there a barge out here over here, Hope Island? It's the most evil looking barge you could possibly imagine. Yeah. So Linka, in trying to escape, I forgot about this. She's trying to escape the barge because obviously Dr. Blight gives chase. And Linka, power of wind, windsurfing, this is convenient, uses her powers, makes a tornado. It's blowing her along. It looks like she's going to get away. The barge has a claw arm that reaches out and just sticks the claw arm into the tornado that's the source of Linka's wind and just dissipates it. It's gone.
I did think that was an interesting way to destroy wind.
Yeah. So memo to Tornado Alley, the Plains states, invest in claw arm technology.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that would have disrupted the wind, but it did.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not going to, like, rip it apart or anything. Nope, that claw arm will disrupt it just enough where it will just stop.
Destroys tornadoes,
be like,
yeah.
Well, I guess I can't do it. It can't be a tornado anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thanks, so, claw arm.
So that's where we are. So what happens, Emily, when the barge gets to the violence?
Checking my notes. Yes. Well, first... First of all, my notes in the opening scene are mainly about Dr. Blight's love affair with the computer.
Yes.
It seems.
Oh, hell yeah.
Dr. Blight and Mal seem to be in some kind of relationship. It's very flirty chit-chat, and she has a lot of nicknames for him.
A lot of nicknames.
Yes, she's like, now activate the force field, honey child.
Like, there was just so much cutesy-cutesy going on between her and a machine, and I didn't like any of it.
Yes.
I didn't like any of it.
The other thing I wanted to note that was that Dr. Blight had a hot pink backhoe on the barge, which there were a lot of pink gear, again, lady science, construction gear, always hot pink. But then she had like a coordinated hot pink hat, and I was like, well, I do like themed things and I do like coordinated outfits, so I'm a little bit into this. And even then she creepily kisses the computer screen and leaves like a hot pink lipstick lip thing on the computer screen. And again, I like that color of lipstick. Anyways, if you need hot pink recommendations, come talk to me. I've tried a lot. And then she switches hats. She's like wearing this hot pink baseball cap.
I didn't notice any of this, and I love it.
I love these detailed notes that you've made.
And so then she's all of a sudden steering the barge, and she switched to a captain's hat.
Oh.
Because I guess she's driving and you need a different hat.
Otherwise you can't. Otherwise it doesn't count.
Yeah, exactly. Anyways, I like accessories too. So that's where we're at in the front part of Captain Planet. And then... oh, yes. And then we get to the next important plot point, which is that Meg Ryan, Dr. Blight, makes a giant force field around Hope Island. Mm-hmm. So this is a nice little illustration of... the greenhouse gas effect, because she makes this. Did we already talk about the force field? I have a note here to look up force fields.
Oh my god, like I think 2 minutes ago,
was it about this force field?
Remember, yeah. I asked the question if we could actually make force fields,
right? I have a note here to research it.
I feel like I should be legitimately concerned right now.
Yeah, are you blacking out in real time?
Are you I'm in a fugue sober? State? I had 2 cups of coffee. I don't know. My next note says more fuel, more smoke.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, man.
Try again. My next note says more fuel, more smoke, more heat.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so she's pumping. The force field is set around
Let
Hope
me
Island.
Turn it back to you.
And you could look up force field.
There's actual crying. This is amazing. So there's a force field around Hope Island. Dr. Blight has run an giant exhaust pipe to pump like burning
everything
smoke.
Bad. Yeah,
yeah. She's burning timber. She's burning coal. She's pumping all this shit into the water of Hope Island. It's coming up and it's causing an immediate greenhouse effect in Hope Island, which had been a cool day, as we know from Kwame and Mati talking about their own little actual greenhouse. And then Wheeler and Guy jump into the ocean because the day has turned very hot immediately mm-hmm. to try to get some relief, and the ocean itself is warm as a bath, so they get no relief right. from that. So there's an immediate greenhouse effect, and Gaia is incapacitated by the increasing pollution.
Right. So as we're, like, then they're trying to figure out a way to fight her. Do they call Captain Planet almost immediately, or do they kind of work with...
They can't because Link is trapped.
Link is trapped, that's right. Okay, so they're trying to figure out, like, what the fuck's going on. Have they even realized by this point that there's, like, something is amiss other than just it's warmer? Because I kept thinking that they didn't really seem, like, they weren't trying to investigate. They were just, like, noticing.
It's just because Gaia's really sick. Okay. They know. I think they go to check on her, go to see what's going on, and okay. she's very ill, and then it becomes clear that there's, you know, a problem with Dr. Blight offshore. They hop in an eco-submarine, the four of them who are still on Hope Island, to try to go get out to the barge and intervene. But they can't get through the force field. So they right. have to wait for... they try to sort of ram through it, and they can't because it extends underwater. They try... they can't summon Captain Planet because Linka is still on board the barge. But eventually Dr. Blight opens the force field because she has a big surprise that she hasn't revealed yet. And it turns out her big surprise is a giant floating iceberg. So she's dragged it from the polar, we don't know where Hope Island is, but she's dragged it from like the polar reaches mm-hmm. Of the planet. And she's going to send this iceberg inside the force field. And the warming of the area around Hope Island will melt the iceberg immediately, raise sea levels, flood Hope Island, and kill Gaia. Mm-hmm. Although, seemed like the pollution itself would have just killed Gaia eventually, but that's her plan.
Yeah, it seems like overkill, and it also seems like, just seems like a lot of work to just take somebody out. It's also expensive.
This is a big assassination attempt.
This is why I'm kind of worried about Blight's mental state at this point, because mm-hmm. she's clearly concocted this idea that has taken a while to get all the necessary components, and now she's talking to her computer as though it's, like, her boyfriend.
That's a good mm-hmm. point.
And it was weird that Mal, in this episode, inhabited a sex toy. I thought that was a surprising...
Stop. With a screen but on it. It does occur to me that I'm also annoyed by the implication that the crazy scientist lady has a computer boyfriend. I feel right. like this adds to weird stereotypes. Yeah. I'm also upset with Meg Ryan for just picking on Linka, who is one of the lady planeteers.
It was blonde on blonde violence.
Yes. And there's a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. I guess this could go either way, though. Should Linka be helping Blight?
Right. No.
I mean, achieve her dreams. I'm just kidding, everyone. I side with the planeteers.
Anyway, for sure.
Yeah. My next note says dead fish.
Oh, when they get in the submarine, they see a bunch of really dead... Some dead fauna because of the pollution in the water.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Please go on.
Anyway, so they get through the force field. They're able to rescue Lenka. The planeteers have a little bit of a back and forth with Blight. They cause her to slip on some oil, mm-hmm. Which is pretty funny. It's a good like banana peel sort of slippage mm-hmm. trick. And they think she's getting away, but then they're able to summon Captain Planet.
Right. But then the problem is that Captain Planet arrives and there's the pollution is too much for him as well. And they're like, oh boy, I don't know. Like maybe you can you even do anything? We're worried about the amount of pollution that's in the air currently. And he's like, yeah, it's not ideal, but guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to harness the power of the fucking sun and just shoot a hole through this force field.
Yes.
And then he does it.
Yeah.
Because he's Captain fucking Planet.
I'll look into whether or not UV rays can do that when I research force fields.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Much appreciated.
That'll be helpful.
But then, like, as soon as the force field is gone, then all of the water, all of the rising water that was inside the force field is now being released as Dr. Blight is trying to skedaddle out of the area because she's all, like, confident in herself. But even Mal was like, should we stick around or, like... make sure everything goes the way it's supposed to, or should we just head out? And she's like, oh, we can just head out. It's cool. I don't like, I know it's all going to work the way it's supposed to. But then all of a sudden, this like rush of water starts going toward her boat. And at this point, it's just like a little speedboat that she has, right? Mm. And then she asks something about surfing.
Yeah, she needs knowledge about surfing.
And then he said, I've got two words for you. Wipeout.
Mm-hmm. Very cool dude.
Mal. Just full of... He had a good joke when she slipped on the oil. Or the computer slipped? I don't know. He said, I think I slipped a disk drive.
Oh, God.
I liked it.
So then that's the end of the episode of proper, right?
Yep.
And then the Planeteer alert was more of the same about, like, do your part to not let greenhouse gases ruin the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was, like, these episodes together in, like, a little bit different ways, but they reflected the classroom message that I remember as mm-hmm. a kid in elementary school, which mm-hmm. was, this is the greenhouse effect. This is how it works. This is what the consequences of this will be.
Mm-hmm.
It was very clear and easy. Not easy, but easy to understand sort of message. And, you know, that the action items are clear too. Burn fewer fossil fuels, etc. And I just thought it was really interesting. And it got me thinking about, like, the evolution of our understanding, acceptance of, and then nonetheless lack of action toward this issue. And yeah, so
well, because even
we can get into that,
even as you're kind of talking about the greenhouse gas thing, like as it was being described, I remember thinking, like, well, this sounds bad, but it was described in a way that didn't seem manageable. Like, you couldn't just put your hands on it and know what to do. They would mention things like, you know, recycle. But they didn't get into, like, nitty-gritty things about, like, coal burning, issues around that, fossil fuels in general, that's a problem, all the effects that it could cause. It was the process that they were explaining, but it's tough to make differences when you don't exactly know how can you contribute.
This, to me, was really interesting because some of these issues we've talked about, acid rain, has sort of come and gone and come again and gone again and come again as an issue. Some of them, like the ozone depletion, has been sort of dealt with. Most of these issues have persisted in one way or another. Poaching remains a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But the sort of elephant in the room, I think, back then, and probably why they spent three episodes at the end of the season in 1990, was global warming, was climate change. And the elephant in the room today, almost the entire duration of time that they jumped forward into the future,
yeah,
is still global warming and climate change. So
yeah.
I think that's kind of like a stunning sort of thing. And it sort of rocked me back a little bit to see that the state of knowledge at the time of this show in 1990, pretty darn good, actually,
yeah.
An understanding of what was about to come,
mm-hmm.
if not necessarily nailed down with the precision that we have now with regard to the stakes, but
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yes, so 30 years ago, the science was good. I don't think we had the same confidence from a scientific perspective,
right?
The way you measure uncertainty, so that has improved over time, but generally speaking, the science of how we understood climate change is the same today as it was in 1990. So that is on one hand reassuring, but on the other hand completely alarming that we've spent now 30 years talking about our level of uncertainty and a lot of people denying climate change. And one of the things you hear from people who deny the existence of man-made climate change is essentially, oh, it's not hot here.
Right.
And you see that a lot in this episode, that it's talk about climate change. They do mention extreme weather. So you see, like, kind of tsunami or some other hurricanes, I think maybe they talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, they talk about it getting hotter. So this is one of those misnomers, or climate change, global warming, excuse me, is a misnomer.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, we're talking about more extreme weather events, which includes heat, extreme heat, and extreme cold. It's not clear to me if this was a messaging issue, or
mm-hmm.
the heating part is very clear from the kind of greenhouse gas emission mechanism. It makes it hotter. And it may have been just taken some time to extrapolate that out into
mm-hmm.
weather patterns and to appreciate and even to measure the uptick in extreme weather patterns. Measuring it in that way, I think, is something that's been new. So it may be both a kind of simplification of message and also sophistication in how we model and measure climate change.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think global warming is a misnomer, not from a climate perspective. I think it's, if you think of, you know, it sort of reflects people confuse climate for weather.
Yeah.
You do that,
yes.
Then you get
yeah.
people
Point.
Who say, oh, it's fucking cold outside and there's a polar vortex and there's 40 inches of snow on the ground in Minneapolis in June
right.
or whatever. like, how could there be global warming or whatever? It's like, well, Minnesota might still have one of its warmest years on record, mm-hmm. even in light of those events. So, like, the extreme weather is a reflection of climate change, of global warming. But there has been an inexorable warming of the planet, and that's happening. So I think it is actually accurate. It just depends on, it's clearer. Maybe it's a better message to say climate change because people struggle with understanding.
Yeah, because I think when people now hear global warming, they then think, well, then we're not going to have those extremes. The cold is going to be less. The heat is going to be more. And we're going to focus on that.
Yeah.
Instead of like really thinking about what that phrase means, like global warming, the planet is heating up, yes. which then leads to climate differences
yes.
and extremes.
Yes.
But that's like, but people don't think about it in those terms.
I get worked up about it because this is how you get like members of Congress showing up on the floor with a snowball and what should otherwise yeah. be a warm time of year and saying there must not be global warming because yeah. look, I have a snowball in my hand.
Right.
Yes. But since it is summertime here in the United States, and I believe our two remaining listeners do believe in the U.S., it's a good time for a public health announcement about extreme heat.
No joke. Well, that's the other thing. So up in Alaska, you know, they've had 90 degree days. Like they broke a record a couple days ago with a 90 degree day. And that is like really uncommon in Anchorage in particular, but throughout the state. And Alaska, I think, is becoming a really particular point to look at and say, here are all of the ramifications that are going on because it's so far north. Like you're seeing villages getting washed out because of coastal waters getting higher. Heat is more. But like that's been one that like I've been keeping an eye on. And I think the heat up there in particular, and they had there's just been some weird fluctuations that have been going on up there that I've been noticing. Because I think now we're on a path where people are understanding that it's not just about like, well, if it gets hotter, then you'll just have to dress differently. It's if
you can
it
only
gets,
get so naked,
right? Like it's true. if it gets hotter, then that affects like then Illinois could turn into a subtropical climate, which would be a problem for what we expect as far as industry and crops and agriculture and whatever that we get out of that area. It's more than just oh, it's hotter,
yes,
or oh,
and
it's
extreme,
colder.
Extreme heat is bad for people, right? I think
yeah.
CDC estimates more than 600 deaths each year to extreme heat.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, little people, old people, little people by little people. I want to clarify that I mean small children. Yikes. People with disabilities, people with mental health issues, all affected more by extreme heat. So to stay hydrated, stay out of cars or homes without air conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
This is a big issue in places like Seattle or Anchorage where mm-hmm. homes don't, or Boston even for that matter, where homes don't have air conditioning. But stay hydrated, stay cool, and wear light clothing.
Mm-hmm.
That's my public health announcement.
The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the UN body that studies this in very intense detail.
And nonpartisan detail.
Nonpartisan. Thousands and thousands of scientists contribute, review, and analyze these works. Despite what some might say, these reports reflect the global consensus as well as anything possibly could on the science of climate change. But the IPCC was founded in 1988 and it released its first assessment report in 1990, the very year that Captain Planet debuted.
Hmm.
So this is probably not terribly surprising. I mean, Ted Turner was obviously worried about this Carter era report. And it turns out that one of the top line findings of this first assessment report was a prediction that under a business as usual scenario, global mean temperature will increase by about 0.3 degrees Celsius per decade during the 21st century, judging that global mean surface air temperature has increased by 0.3 to 0.6 degrees Celsius over the past 100 years, but the unequivocal detection of the enhanced greenhouse effect is not likely for a decade or more. And what happens over the course of the several additional, I think there have been five to this point, assessment reports, is they become more certain about the fact that it's human contributions, human burning of fossil fuels, and human activity that's causing climate change, and a lot more certainty about what the actual impacts will be because of that. And the most recent report they issued came in the fall of last year of 2018, they call it the 1.5 degree Celsius report. And essentially what they're finding is that absent extreme action that will reduce emissions by something like 40 or 45%, I believe, by 2030, we're basically staring at keeping global warming to a degree and a half Celsius or seeing it reach 2 degrees. So the difference of half a degree they project is massive. Mm-hmm. So we are at a place now where the best case scenario is we only warm another degree and a half and we have some coastal flooding, some effects, some famine, other these things, or it goes another half degree mm-hmm. and we're in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. Basically all of the things that we saw in this episode, just to take a step back, I thought that this episode played really well with a simple message and it portrayed the effects of climate change kind of as hyperbole mm-hmm. by, you know, 2025 was the projection. And sitting here today, it's like, well, yes, it was hyperbole. We're not going to see that by 2025, but Jesus, it doesn't actually look like hyperbole now. So, positive message.
Well, I think then on that note, let's wrap up this episode.
And this series.
And this series.
Oh my gosh.
Of Gaia's Gang. Thank you to the 1, 2, possibly 3 listeners who tune in and have been very patient as we slowly have rolled out episodes.
I see Emily looking at her phone. Do we have a Force Fields update?
No, before we wrap it up.
Well, I have several updates. Force Fields, yes, they're possible. People are in development. Boeing actually has a patent now, a 2015 right. patent for a force field for military vehicles. It's a plasma airfield force field to absorb shock from collisions or explosions, apparently. There are a few others in the works, various. I mean, it's not exactly Star Wars or Captain Planet, if you will, but mm-hmm. looks like it's a real thing. That's all I learned during our episode.
All right. Well, hopefully you learned much more listening to this podcast. And, you know, as always, questions, comments, concerns, send them along. And thanks for listening, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.